3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeout for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager! That just happened! Thank you very much!
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
And welcome back once again to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill here. Well, here it is. The weekend is here after a long, long off day. An off day, no baseball. What did you do for a whole day? Don't worry, baseball's back today, though. This is a series we've all been looking forward to. So no recap, clearly, with the off day. But we've got a big podcast for you. We'll get you ready for the Detroit series. And also we'll get a close look at the Detroit Tigers. They've struggled the last couple weeks, and the burning question for me, is this just a hiccup during the season that all teams go through, or is this a symptom of something more? Rob Rojacki is going to join us coming up on the podcast. He's a writer at blessyouboys.com, Detroit Tigers-focused site, and he'll provide some good insight on the Tigers and also the series coming up this weekend. Mariners and Tigers, the M's, now half game back of the wild card because the Tigers beat the Pirates yesterday while the Mariners were off. So big, big series coming up this weekend. Right now, though, we're going to talk to Mark Simon of ESPN, ESPN.com. He's ESPN stats and information guru. Great stuff. Great follow on Twitter as well. He wrote a very interesting piece on the Sweet Spot blog at ESPN.com. And check it out because it's great. But it's about Kyle Seager and his defense. And, you know, he makes the case that Kyle Seager is the most improved defensive player in baseball. It's a really good piece. He talks to Kyle Seager, Chris Woodward, of course, who he works with so much, a couple of scouts. It's a really well-rounded perspective. Both the scouts' view and the numbers, what the numbers say as well. So it's really good stuff. And so I had a chance to talk to Mark about it. Not only that, we get in some really interesting conversation about the Mariners, where they sit in the wild card race. Felix Hernandez MVP.
Well, we have a special guest back with us once again. It's Mark Simon. You can find him on Twitter at MSimonESPN. Of course, ESPN stats and info. Mark, very good to have you back on the show again. We certainly appreciate your time. And you have a fantastic piece up on the Sweet Spot blog. I recommend everyone going there and checking it out. It's about Kyle Seager and his defense. It's funny, too, because it's a topic we've been talking quite a bit about on the show, about Kyle Seager and his defense. What did you find when you dove into the subject about Kyle Seager and his D?
Well, I wanted to look at it from both a numbers and a scout's perspective to see if what I found statistically matched up. You can look at players from last year to this year, and if you use some of those advanced defensive stats, something like a UZR or a defensive run saved, which is the one that I used in this case, he actually rates as the most improved. His rating this season is 10 defensive runs saved, which at the time that I wrote it, I think was second in the American League, trailing only Josh Donaldson. And the previous 2 years, he was, I think it was -8 and -7, which means that he was hurting the Mariners defensively. Now, these stats don't just look at the balls that you field. They look at the balls that you miss, too, the balls that get through for base hits. There are a lot of different components that go into a stat like this. So I wanted to talk to him. I talked to Chris Woodward, who's the infield coach, and I talked to a couple of scouts, and I looked closer at the numbers. And it seemed, and I watched video too, that it's fairly that it's legit that he's improved in a number of areas. One of the things that he does a lot better now is he comes on, in on balls very well. He's aggressive in charging the ball, and we talked about that, and he explained how that's come to be in the piece. And also the anticipatory skills that are necessary to play an infield position. If you've ever seen Dustin Pedroia on the Red Sox before a pitch, we'll do this whole thing where he moves to one side and takes a little hop as the pitch is coming to the plate. Kyle doesn't necessarily do something that extreme, but he's learned a lot about anticipating before the pitch and trying to figure out and deduce, based on what he knows the pitch is going to be, where the ball's going to be hit. And that's been a major edge for him this year. He finds that it works really well.
It's interesting, and you mentioned your defensive run saves, the metrics that you use all the time, and you look at the Mariners as a whole, they are vastly improved as a team.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. They're over 100 defensive runs saved better this year than they were last year. Last year, they were one of the worst teams in the history of the stat, which goes back about 10 years. They were negative 97, and the issues were all over the place. Not just the infield, but the outfield in particular. And some of that was due to the presence of one Michael Morse, who rated among the worst in baseball. They made some changes, and I would describe the outfield defense as having gone from horrendous to acceptably slightly below average. And when you do that, that's just as good as going from average to very good. And it's amazing the difference that something like that can make. A couple of people have made points to me about it since I brought it up. One point was that, and I thought this was interesting, that when Chris Young pitches, he induces so many high, easy pop-ups and high fly balls that they're easier for the outfielders to catch, and thus that would help their rating out. I do think that they're a little better. Ackley actually has rated fairly well by this stat. Even though he looks a little awkward at times, he's worlds better than Michael Morse in left field, who basically can't catch anything that's hit over his head. And something like that can lead to, as you've seen this year, much better production and much better pitching. The Mariners' ERA is way down this year, and I think that's the defense is one of the reasons why.
Yeah. How do you calculate defensive runs saved?
All right. So there are a number of things that go into it. For an outfielder, you're looking at catching fly balls. Where are you catching them? Are you catching them in the deepest parts of the park? Are you catching them in the gaps? Are you catching them really shallow in the outfield, or are you barely moving to catch them? Each spot that you're catching a ball in has a value, and some values are higher than others. If you catch a ball in the right center gap on the warning track that most guys aren't getting to because it's only up in the air for a couple of seconds, you're getting a really good spike in terms of your defensive run saved. All of those catches and balls that you missed get added together over the course of a season, and they're able to come up with a number that they define as a range thing, but it's more a how often did I catch the ball thing, because it could depend on where you were positioned. The other thing that comes into play is outfield arm, and it's not just something where, all right, if you throw a guy out at a base, you get a spike. You get rewarded if you prevent a guy from going first to third on a single or second to home on a single. If you got to the ball quickly and got the ball back into the infield, you're being rewarded for that. Right now, Alex Gordon is like off the charts in that stat. He's by far the best player in baseball when it comes to throwing arm reward. So you combine those together. You add in a little spike if you rob a home run, because then you're literally saving runs because you're taking runs off the board by catching a ball over the fence. And you add all those together and you get a number. For infielders, it's a similar kind of thing, except it's looking, instead of fly balls, it's looking at the ground balls that you field, how you do on defending bunts, and how efficient you are at turning a double play. The math on it gets a little complicated, but for the most part, I think it matches up with what you see, what your instincts would tell you.
Yeah, and you're right. We've gone back and forth about Kyle Seager, and I think it does match up what we've seen. And again, I recommend going to the Sweet Spot blog there on ESPN.com and checking it out. Mark Simon here from ESPN, Stats and Info. M. Simon ESPN on Twitter, a fantastic follow. I recommend that highly as well. Let's turn our attention, and I know as a numbers guy, you can appreciate the season that Felix Hernandez is having, really in some ways, historical season. What have you seen from the King this year?
He's the best. I loved the game the other night where you had where the Mariners drew 41,000. That was fantastic. I was glad that people have turned his starts into what is now, I guess, a major event. You're going to have two guys this year potentially, him and Kershaw, who could both win the AL MVP, who are potentially both going to have sub-2 ERAs and whips that are like in the 0.8 0.9 range and no hits per nine and the strikeout to walk of like 6-1. And I think what you'll find by the time this is all said and done, he's not necessarily going to rank in that first tier of best pitching seasons of all time, but I think he will be a respectable person in that second tier with just the combination of everything that he's done. It's not necessarily Pedro circa 99-2000 or Bob Gibson 1968, but historically speaking, I think he'll be up there with the one that I guess I go back to from my childhood is something like Roger Clemens 1986, where he was 24-4 with a low 2 ERA. What Felix is doing this year will probably be the equivalent of that. You could make a reasonable case, certainly, that you could have MVP pitchers in both leagues. He's third in the American League in WAR. Kershaw is first. He's been awesome. I ran a heat map the other day on the changeup and how hitters just can't touch it. And it's pretty cool what he has done. And what he has done with a velocity that is not necessarily up, you know, where a lot of the fireballers are in the 97-98 range.
No, that's been the beauty of it. Now, are you a pitcher for MVP?
I don't have a problem with it. Okay. I think if you impact the game enough, I think you have to be extraordinary to do it, because to beat out a guy that's playing 140, 150 games per year. This is a year where Mike Trout has had a really good season, but he hasn't had what you would think of as an epic season like the two previous ones. Miguel Cabrera's numbers are not up there as they have been in previous years. Also, him playing first base. There are a lot of good first basemen, so he doesn't necessarily rate as high. It's funny, in the American League, in Baseball Reference's WAR, the rankings now are Trout, Donaldson, Felix, Chris Sale, Corey Kluber. So pitchers are actually occupy three of the top five spots in the American League. And the way that he's going with this two runs, seven innings or more streak, that's the best streak in the modern era, if he gets that up to in the 20s, I think he may wind up surpassing Trout for the WAR lead, I guess. And I think that makes him very viable for MVP.
That's remarkable. Well, Mariners, of course, big part thanks to King Felix and the rest of the pitching. 8-1 homestand, sweeping aside the Blue Jays, heading into a big series with Detroit this weekend. How do you view this wild card race? It's been up and down with the Royals, the Tigers, the Yankees, a lot of teams in the mix. How do you view it?
So a week ago, I went on a radio spot in Canada, and I said the AL wild card is between the Blue Jays and the Yankees, and there's nobody else that's necessarily going to challenge for that. And now I'm embarrassed a week later because I feel like I kind of misread things. I think with the combination of Hernandez and Iwakuma, I think you're in pretty good shape, because you never have to worry about whether or not you're going to get a good start from those guys. You always do. You have the closer at the back, who now has 35 saves, and you have the guys setting him up who throw 96-97 and who strike out a lot of guys and don't walk a lot of guys. I still wish that the Mariners had gotten one more bat. I don't necessarily know who that is. And I think if they don't make it, I think it will be because of their offensive shortfalls. I could certainly, if I was going to handicap it now, I still think that the Yankees will get that second wild card. But with Detroit now potentially having entered that mix, I would say I would feel pretty good about the Mariners hanging in it until September. And then in September, I think it's really going to come down to how someone like Paxton pitches. I think it'll come down to whether or not Seager finishes strong, which, as Dave Schoenfeld pointed out, he didn't the last couple of years. I think you'll need some sort of offensive spark from someone just to kind of give you a boost. Maybe it's Kendrys, whoever it is, that you're not expecting. And Austin Jackson's a nice get, but I don't know that he's necessarily a difference maker. If I was handicapping, I don't know, 25% chance, 30, 40% chance, somewhere in there, I think that the Mariners make the playoffs, which is better than what I would have said at the start of the season, that's for sure.
Oh, no question about that. Yeah, they've been a big surprise in the American League, clearly, and certainly in it at this point. Should be a fun September regardless. Yeah,
and it seems, too, like they have a very nice home field advantage. I was watching this homestand, and with the combination of the dimensions of the park, and I think we saw it before in the mid-90s in the Kingdome, that once the city really gets behind the team, it makes for a pretty cool atmosphere. And I think you're starting to see that and you're starting to feel that. And I think that something like the Price-Hernandez matchup on Saturday is going to feel like a playoff game.
Yeah, no doubt about that. That is going to be a fun one. So before you go, I've got to ask you about a Q&A you just had with Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah, this was actually kind of funny. I'm a longtime fan of his. He's active on Twitter in following baseball people. He likes baseball statistics. He likes baseball minutia. And we did a Q&A to kind of promote he was promoting his web series, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. And we got on the subject of who's the fastest guy home to third on hitting a triple. It was initially a Mets debate, but it expanded to something that was more broad. And I said to him that, you know, 6-7 years ago, that people were telling me that the answer to that was easily Ichiro. And that led to him talking at length, and I included the text of it in the Q&A, him talking at length about his interest in Ichiro and what he finds fascinating about Ichiro. And I would recommend it to anyone that's a Mariners fan and an Ichiro fan, because I think they will get a kick out of seeing someone like Jerry Seinfeld say such interesting things about him.
That's fantastic. Where can people find it?
It will be on ESPNNewYork.com. Okay. And you can also go to my Twitter, MSimonESPN. I'm sure I will link to it probably about 5 times.
Well, if Jerry Seinfeld's following you, everyone should be following you, right?
Yeah, it is kind of cool, but I appreciate that. And the Mariners have made things interesting. I like watching them, I will say that.
Well, Mark, thanks a lot for the time. We certainly appreciate the visit at MSimonESPN, ESPN stats and info guru. And again, the Sweet Spot blog, you can find the Kyle Seager story up. Mark, let's do this again. I really appreciate the time. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was Mark Simon, a really fun conversation. He's been on before. We would definitely have him on again. I enjoy those conversations quite a bit. So let's turn our attention to the Detroit Tigers. By the way, I failed to mention, we're going to end things on the podcast today with our history highlight. This one's good. It's one of the greatest moments in Mariners history, and it's fitting because it came against the Tigers. So I thought I'd drum up some good mojo for the M's as they head off to the Motor City. But that comes up at the end of the podcast. Right now, we're going to turn to a conversation about the Tigers. All right, as now we get a Detroit view of things, we have Robert Jackie on the line with us. You can see him on Twitter at BYBRob. You can find his writing at blessyouboys.com, all about the Detroit Tigers. He's been the deputy editor there since 2011. Rob, thanks so much for taking the time. We certainly appreciate it. And I think we're all in Seattle very anxious to get an up-close view at the Detroit Tigers right now. And we know the past couple of weeks, it's been kind of a struggle for the Tigers. Has this just been something that happens to every team during the course of the season, kind of a bump in the road, or is there more to this that could have long-term ramifications for this season?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that the team's going through a particularly rough stretch right now. There's been a lot of bad luck involved with that. For instance, they're just 7-7 in August right now, and that's even after a 3-game sweep to start the month. Of those 7 losses, 4 of them have been by 1 run, and 2 more of them have been in pretty close games that have really only been decided by a play or two. So a lot of that is, you know, will bounce one way or the other, and they could be, you know, have eight or nine wins during the month. But part of it has just been some bad baseball as well. They haven't played great defense. The bullpen has been shaky. They blew saves in 2 of the 3 games they played in Toronto, and then they had the bullpen coughed up another lead in New York as well during the series before. So I think that the luck has contributed to a lot of their struggles recently, as well as having the Kansas City Royals kind of sneak up on them as well. I was looking today and the Royals are 11-2 in August. So when you have a team playing that high, it's hard to stay ahead of them for too long.
You mentioned the bullpen, too. I mean, Nathan has had his up and down all season. What can be done at this point now? Is there anyone waiting in the wings to help the cause, I guess, for the past next month and a half or so?
You know, to a point, they do have Joaquin Soria. I guess you could say he's waiting in the wings. Yeah. He was actually placed on the disabled list earlier this week with an oblique strain. But it doesn't seem like something that's going to keep them out for too long, at least we hoped. But other than that, yeah, they kind of just have to ride the arms that they have right now. You mentioned Joe Nathan. He's been very shaky as of late. He actually got into some hot water with the team and with the fan base for a particularly obscene gesture to the home fans after after closing out a win on Wednesday, of all things. But I think that between him, Jabba Chamberlain, and Joaquin Soria, you know, if those three guys can't get the job done in October, they're going to be in trouble.
And of course, the big news nationally, Justin Verlander having to get an MRI, getting a start scratch. But I don't know if it's receiving enough attention. Anibal Sanchez going on the DL for a long stretch, too. How big is that loss for the Tigers?
Yeah, getting both of those guys to go down at the same time is really a big loss. You lose one guy like Sanchez, who had gone on the disabled list earlier this year, and you can kind of make up for that with Robbie Ray, who was the big return in the Doug Pfister trade last offseason. And Ray's pitched fairly well. He looked very good in his first two starts in the big leagues back in May, then got knocked around a little bit in the third start in May before Sanchez returned. But then he made his fourth start of the season this week against the Pittsburgh Pirates. It looked pretty good for the most part. His final line didn't look so great after the bullpen allowed a couple of inherited runners to score. But overall, Ray has been kind of a steady sixth starter for them, so to speak. But like you mentioned, with both Verlander and Sanchez going down, the real problem is who is that other guy to fill the void? The team turned to Buck Farmer, a 2013 draft pick who started the year in single-A ball and had only made two starts in double-A before getting the call to the big leagues. He started on Wednesday and pitched fairly well for the Tigers, giving up four runs in five innings. And the offense picked things up to win the game in the end. But having to lean on someone like that who's so inexperienced for a long stretch could be troublesome for them going down the stretch.
With just one of the best names you could possibly have for a baseball player. That's
absolutely
outstanding. Buck Farmer, that is fantastic. So this is going to be an odd question, but I guess Miguel Cabrera has set the standard for himself so high, so astronomically high, that it's tough to meet it. You look at the numbers, he's had a great season, so don't get me wrong, but has he been the same guy this year that he's been the past couple of years?
Yes and no. Cabrera had what has been called core muscle repair surgery during the offseason. As I gather, that's basically repairing the sports hernia that he had suffered last year and was really kind of affecting him down the stretch and during the playoffs last season. So he had the surgery, but didn't really get to go through his usual offseason regimen, and even admitted around the All-Star break that he still wasn't quite feeling like himself. Whether that's saying he's having pain or he just doesn't feel like the same guy and doesn't have the same swing, that's anyone's guess, because Cabrera hasn't really said much beyond that this year. But still, the numbers bear out that he's still, like you said, a pretty darn good hitter. He's still hitting for average, still, showing good plate discipline and taking his walks. But really, the thing that has been his MO is having, amazing power to all fields, and he just hasn't had that this year. I know that his home run per fly ball rate, the amount of fly balls he hits that end up in his home run, that rate has been cut in half this year. I think that shows really that he's just not getting the same oomph that he was getting on the ball last year before he hurt himself in September.
Yeah, and this Mariner fans here are really looking forward to this series, 3 in Detroit, and all the talk has been the wild card race. What about the focus for the Tigers? They've had a lock on the Central for most of the season until recently. Is this just another series? Is the focus still on the division? How is it looked at from the Tigers' perspective?
Well, the focus is absolutely still on the division. Yeah. They're only half a game out against the Kansas City Royals right now, and nearly all of their games in September are going to be against AL Central opponents. I don't know off the top of my head how many games I have left against the Royals, but they still have probably two or three series left to go with them as well. So there's still plenty of opportunities for them to take the division and avoid that one-game playoff that no one really wants to be in.
You're right about that. Although, certainly given where the Mariners started this season, I think they would definitely take it. And Saturday for me, I am really looking forward to Saturday. I think that's going to be sensational. King Felix on the Hill against David Price. It should be a beauty of a ball game.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the David Price trade was just the latest in the line of exciting moves that the Tigers have made in recent years, from trading for Miguel Cabrera to signing Prince Fielder and now trading for David Price. You know, expectations have gotten even higher since he joined the team. But, you know, having a pitching matchup like that, you know, it's almost a shame that this game isn't going to be on national television, that the whole country won't get to watch, because it's going to be a doozy.
Yeah, it deserves to be. It'd be good for baseball, too, to get games like that on the national scene. What about Austin Jackson? He comes back to Detroit. What's the reception going to be like when he returns?
I can't imagine that reception is going to be anything but positive for him. I don't know if you caught it, but right at the trade deadline when the David Price trade went down, they actually had to take Jackson out during the middle of an inning, took him out of center field. And he received a standing ovation from the crowd, who seemed to know kind of what was going on at that point. You know, Jackson was really kind of a fan favorite in Detroit. You know, some may say that he struck out too much or things like that, but he was, you know, an amazing fielder to watch defensively, and always seemed like a guy that really gave his all for the team. So I imagine he's going to get a nice reception when he steps into the batter's box on Friday.
Detroit seems to be in an interesting spot. I mean, I'm guessing that this is going to be it for Max Scherzer with the Tigers. We'll see what happens after the season. Yeah, Price is there for another year and a half. Verlander has struggled a little bit. Cabrera's still a fantastic player, but getting on the older side of things. Are we looking at a couple-year window now for the Tigers to try and push this thing through and win it all?
That seems to be the case at this point. You know, the David Price trade almost seems like this is kind of a one last hurrah for this current unit. You know, and Dave Dombrowski has done just an amazing job of extending this window as long as possible. And I still think that they're going to be, you know, a great team for a few years to come now, especially if they don't really find much of a challenger in the AL Central in the next few years. But this is really looking like their best chance, with you know, Scherzer, Price, and hopefully a healthy Verlander in the playoff rotation. It really doesn't get much better than that for your chances.
No, and it's funny, just on the outside looking in, it seems like the only piece that has been missing the past several years has been the bullpen. I mean, at times in the playoffs, you've had Phil Koch trying to close games. It just seems like there's been uncertainty the past few years at the back end of the bullpen, and it seems like that problem has reared its head once again this season.
Absolutely, and I think the bullpen issues date back even further than just, you know, the past couple of years. Dating back to, I want to say, 2006, when the Tigers made that improbable run to their first World Series in over 20 years. That was really, I think, the last time that they had statistically an above-average bullpen in the American League. Ever since then, it's really been almost, Dave Dombrowski's MO has almost been to find his one guy as a closer. You know, he had Jose Valverde for a while. Now he's got Joe Nathan, but really hasn't shored up the middle relief depth that so many other teams seem to have, and I think that's really cost them.
Well, Rob, we certainly appreciate the time and the insights on the Tigers. It should be a fun weekend. Rob Rojacki, you can find him on Twitter, at BYBRob, and you can find all his work, blessyouboys.com, all about the Tigers. Thanks a lot, Rob. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So there it is, an inside look at the Tigers and what this series is all about. Now, before we end things with the highlight, I thought I'd get you ready for a series with the Tigers. I think this will do it. The old Detroit Tigers theme song. You ready for this? Here it comes.
We're all behind our baseball team. Go get 'em, Tiger.
World Series bound and picking up steam.
Go get 'em, Tiger.
There'll be joy in Tiger Town. We'll sing you songs when the Bengals bring the pennant home where it belongs.
We're all behind our baseball team.
Go get 'em,
Detroit Tigers.
Go get 'em, Tigers.
Okay, you ready now? Now that you've heard that? Well, let's end things with our history highlight, and this was a good one. It came against the Detroit Tigers, and I can still picture Mike Heath with that wild uppercut swing about chin high at a Randy Johnson heater, June 2nd, 1990, when he would no-hit the Detroit Tigers.
Another one to Scotty to hand to Randy Johnson, a man all alone with himself, but not all alone here, as 24,000 incredibly rabid Mariner fans are looking for that final strike. That will set Mariner history. Here comes the left-hander's wind. The 0-2 pitch on the way. Strike! It's over! He has done it! High fastball, Randy Johnson being mobbed by Scott Bradley down to greet him and the entire Mariner team here on the 2nd of June. It ends at 9:51 Pacific Daylight Time. Randy Johnson with the first Mariner no-hitter in history, and they are going crazy. Everybody saluting the tallest man to ever put on a uniform in the history of baseball. Randy Johnson has done it. He has no-hit the Detroit Tigers tonight, 2-0. My, oh,